Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Did you know, mister? Hear what I say, sir, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Get your hands in the air, sir. Woo, yeah. Then you will get no hurt, mister. No, no, no. I said, yeah.
I said, yeah.
Cheers, my brother.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thank you.
We're in Brewdog. It's pre-opening hours. We're on water. I thought it was maybe a bit too early for a beer on a Monday morning.
Stoptober as well, innit? So, you know.
Have you done it?
I'm kind of doing it, yeah.
Yeah?
More just like stop drinking every weekend, you idiot. Yeah, I've been doing it since I was about 15. It's not good for me, is it?
Am I right in thinking you're a dad?
I am a dad, yeah.
Girl?
Yeah, little girl, yeah. Phoebe, yeah.
So when did that happen?
2014, she was born, yeah. Okay. It was a birthday. The other day, so October 2014, she arrived.
And being a parent obviously is the biggest trip I think you can ever experience in life. And a lot of my friends are now at that stage. How did it impact you?
Everything really. At first you're kind of like, oh, this hasn't changed anything. You know, I'm still doing this and doing that. But then it's kind of when different times really, like, you know, you don't really go out as much because you've got a little one to look after, and then, you know, money. You know, you used to be able to go, yeah, new Spider-Man game, I'm having that launch day, yeah. And now it's like, oh, actually, I could do with getting some food in and stuff. So you have to judge everything twice, don't you? Everything's like, you're not just looking after you anymore. You've got obviously someone else to look after. But it's the best thing in the world, mate.
Like, it is, yeah.
Yeah, genuinely, when parents say that, and you're a bit like, all right, mate, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been to Florida. But no, it is the best thing in the world. Like, you know, my little girl's 4 now. She's smarter than me already. Like, you can have full-on conversations with her, and it's just amazing. We sat down and watched the new Doctor Who last night, and that's something I absolutely love.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, let's definitely talk about that real quickly, because I'm not a big fan of the show, but I've been watching with interest the negative reaction
to
obviously a female casting in that role.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Which is, in 2018, insane that people get still hung up on such a, to me, I guess it's the same with James Bond, and whether it's going to be Idris Elba or not, it's a similar sort of thing. Like, fans of that franchise in both cases, just in outrage. Like, you can't, especially with Doctor Who, am I right in thinking that the Doctor is actually an alien?
He's an
anyway?
Alien, yeah. Yeah, he's not a man or a woman, is it? He's a Time Lord, so.
So if you can go through time and space and shift and do all of that, then surely you can change your physical form and not have a penis.
Exactly, yeah. Like, you know, people are arguing.
Like, that's the thing you find hard to believe.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. People can't get their head around the Doctor, you know, swapping genders and
it's mad, isn't it? I actually saw the other day, like, a Facebook post, and there was so much negativity and bile on there.
Yeah.
And she's an amazing actress. Paddy's new film, Journeyman.
Yeah. I've not seen it yet, no.
She's obviously the lead in that, and she's incredible.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Was it Broadchurch?
She was in Broadchurch, yeah. I've not seen much of her stuff, to be honest, Jodie Whittaker, but I listened to a podcast that she was on, and she just sounds really nice. She's dead down to earth, and she's a Northerner, another Northern doctor. Do you know what I mean? Christopher Eccleston should have gone on for a good couple of series, but because he was freaking amazing. Can we swear on this?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
He was freaking amazing. I'll say that for now.
I've said it now. I've got to commit.
Yeah, and it's just nice to hear another, you know, Northern doctor on there. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, you know, David Tennant was very, very Northern because he was Scottish, but he played it, which I didn't like. You know, he played it kind of, it was great, but, you know, could have kept his Scottish accent, I guess.
Who is your all-time favourite?
It's got to be David Tennant.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Only because I never really watched it until I was on a caravan holiday. Must have been about 16, and it was just on TV, you know, when you got four channels in a caravan and mm-hmm. they'll
and you're going stir crazy with boredom.
Yeah, exactly. It's raining. Your mum thought it'd be a good idea to go to Rill. It's never a good idea to go to Rill. It was just on, and I was like, oh, this is cool. I like sci-fi and that. And then I was literally like, what's this? And my mum was like, oh, I think it's Doctor Who. It used to be on when I was a kid. And then, I just started watching it. And then I watched David Tennant. He was my first Doctor. Watched all his stuff. And then I found, this was back in the day of like, you know, what was it like, LimeWire and stuff. Like found before like iPlayer and that. Sorry, BBC.
And you'd get absolute virus central.
Yeah. So I downloaded the series of Christopher Eccleston's and that. And I really liked him as well. But yeah, definitely David Tennant. But yeah, Jodie Whittaker's amazing. And like I say, you know, I got to watch it with my little girl last night. And that's great as well. Like, you know, it's always been inclusive, I guess, of everyone. But now that the Doctor's a girl, like my little girl's watching it going, oh, this is cool. And it's great. What a role model for her. I think they've just released a Barbie doll now as well. That's kind of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor as a Barbie.
So oh, right, okay.
Definitely getting one of them for a light, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's sweet that you can sort of see the inspiration that something like that has on very young children.
Mm.
And that surely is enough of a joyful, positive thing to outweigh all the online negativity.
Yeah, 100%.
But there is a lot of that.
Oh, yeah, loads. I mean, with that kind of stuff, you know, like, exactly like you say, you know, the fictional characters. I remember just Jack Forney wrote, some of This Is England wrote the Harry Potter stage play in London. And with that, they did a similar thing. They cast a black actress as Hermione Granger, and it was an uproar. And it's like, it's never said she's white in the books. You've made her, and obviously the films with Emma Watson, obviously she was played by a white lady, but it's a fictional character. She's a witch. She's not a real. It's not a. You know what I mean? Like, get your head around the fact that she can, you know, do magic before
a race. Of her skin.
Yeah, like it's crazy. And you know, James Bond's the same, isn't it? Like, if Idris gets it, then that'd be amazing. Like, Idris Elba is James Bond.
On your hand, so very quickly. Yeah, yeah. Did you all get that done when you made the film?
Yeah, so the tattoo, yeah. Not when we made the film, because I was 15, so that would have been a bit... That Shane would have been doing a couple of court cases, wouldn't it? No, when we went back to do the series. When we did the film, like I say, I was young, and that tattoo, the T, I call it, because I'm an atheist, was kind of... saying that you were in the gang, do you know what I mean? It was kind of, this is to show you're in the gang. And when we went back to do the series, I was like, oh, I really want to get the tattoo done. And Shane was like, yeah, it's a good idea. Why don't you all go and do it as a bot? Because we did like a week before we started shooting.
This is for 86. Bonded.
This is for 86, yeah. Yeah, when we first went back. We did like a week of bonding. And yeah, that was part of it. He was like, yeah, go and get them done. So we all went to a tattoo shop. Most of the lads got it at the cross of the middle finger. Couple of the girls got it on like the wrist. Tomo Turgoose got everyone's name on his ass.
Everyone's
pretty much
just
the
words
cast.
Everybody's name.
Oh no! Yeah, it looks like the ending credits to an episode on his ass. He's literally got like Andy Ellis,
to outdo everyone.
Andrew Shim. Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. You know what Tomo's like. But yeah, no, he's full of them, isn't he, Tomo? He's full of like random tattoos. His best one was he had Stewie Griffin.
Yeah, I've seen that.
On his thigh.
But he's getting it.
He's getting it
off, isn't
now,
it?
Yeah. But when he got it, I was like, why have you got that, mate? He went, oh, you know, when I go for a shit, like, just makes me smile. Like, oh, mate. One of them instant regrets.
I
did
notice that
in
his car because he was wearing shorts when we sat down to do that podcast with him. And I was like, is that Stewie Griffin on your leg?
Yeah.
But it looked like it was just getting done because it's obviously in the reverse process.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, no, it's been done. It's coming off.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason I asked you about that is because I feel like the politics and the themes of fascism and racism in This Is England are more prevalent, scarily so now.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Than ever before. And I hadn't seen, I've rewatched in the lead up to this chat, the film and all the seasons, mm-hmm. and I hadn't watched them in a long time. And the obviously political backdrop there is so, you know, situated around racial tension.
Yeah.
And everywhere you go now in the world, America and the UK particularly,
yeah.
but I imagine all over, there's real... like strife and divide and
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? I think because one thing that I always get from watching the series is the fashion stuff that that comes back around fashion. So, you know, when we did the film, the skinhead kind of fashion, you know, sort of 20 years later, you've seen that a bit more. Then when we did 90, like nowadays, the 90s fashion.
Yeah, you go to Urban Outfitters and there's Fila tracksuits and Elise, and you're like, what?
Unfortunately.
That's coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's all coming back, which is amazing. But unfortunately, I think with that, not with fashion, but a similar sort of thing is, like fascism and stuff seems to come around every so many years or so. I don't know what it is. I think it's like one kind of ideology, you know, getting very prominent, pisses a load of people off, and then they start shouting louder, and then, you know, it swings to the other side because they're shouting louder, and it'll be like that for a couple of years, and then, you know, the left will start shouting loud again, and it'll go back that way and back that way. But it's such a fucking shame, isn't it? Like, it is horrible, man. Like, you keep seeing all these things, like, what's his face who got into the Supreme Court or whatever, I've kind of followed it, Kavanaugh or whatever his name is. You know, like, he had allegations made against him for, like, sexual abuse and stuff. So is the fucking president. Like, we're saying that like that's the thing, you know what I mean? It's like,
I can't remember the comedian, but he's a black comedian, and he was doing this bit where he says that, you know, one guy, a black guy, gets accused of sexual assault and he ends up in the big house.
Yeah.
A white guy gets accused of sexual assault and he ends up in the White House.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's white privilege as you know, which is a thing that you say, like, I thought was disappearing. With, you know, because it is a weird point in history, I guess, where you have got these great things happening, like there being, you know, huge female role models, you know, different races as great role models.
I think it's the best time in the history of the world to be a minority at this point.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side is because these minority groups are now being hopefully treated better, a lot of those people who still harbour these insecurities and, you know, prejudices are getting angry, aren't they? Because they're like, oh, my world's changing.
Yeah, and it's like the world's changing all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I hate this whole, like, the Brexit thing, because for me it's like, you know, we're moaning about how much money we pay to Europe and all this and all that, and people coming over, and it's like, we fucking ruin their countries. Like, the British Empire, we're the biggest pile of bastards in the world, man. Do you know what I mean? And it makes me genuinely, like, not very proud to be... I've never got that anyway, mate. I've never got...
That nationalistic sense of pride.
Yeah, you're proud of where you...
Proud of being a northerner.
Yeah. Well, no, not even that, mate. No? Like, no, genuinely not. Like, because there's nothing to be proud of, I guess. It's just... My mum and dad happen to, you know, be in the north.
From a certain part of the
country. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I say, you know, I'm lived in London a couple of years back with my missus. You know, if we'd have had a kid there, she'd have been a southerner, I guess. But she's not. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Like, you know,
it's all just lines in the sand, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, who says that that's theirs and that's theirs? It's the people at the top who are just, yeah.
There's a funny scene in This Is England 90 where Tom's character Sean is like, you what? I'm Scottish and you never thought to tell me.
Yeah.
And he's like livid about it. And she's like, well, I didn't see what difference it would make. You know, it just never came up in conversation. And he's like, oh, but you know what?
Yeah.
And it is that thing, isn't it? It's like, I definitely wouldn't be, you know, put out of place if I suddenly found out one day I was like Irish.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, exactly.
I'd be
like,
oh, well, that's an exotic new addition to my life.
yeah, that's it. It's, you are who you are, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You
know, it's like, who you are, not what you are, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, if you found out that, you know, you get older and some people find out the dad isn't the dad, or, the you know, they're adopted or whatever, it's like, does that really change things? You know,
well, I think some people would get really hung up on that. That's an interesting 100%. One, because I definitely wouldn't. It's like, well, if you're the person that's raised me,
mm-hmm.
and you're the person that I have that relationship with,
yeah.
it doesn't matter whose balls I came out of, do you know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, I've got a stepdad, he raised me. You know, he's my dad. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's done all that fatherly stuff for me. The only thing he didn't do is he wasn't there. Yeah, he wasn't there when it was, unless they were dogging, but I don't think they were. Yeah.
What about your biological father? Is he around?
So I don't really see much of him, to be honest.
No.
He lives in London.
Right.
But yeah.
So he was gone from an early age, and your stepdad's basically been...
Yeah,
say,
pretty much. Yeah. My stepdad's raised me since I was a baby, sort of thing. So yeah, that's.
And brothers and sisters, you got any of them?
Yeah, I've got a little sister, and then I've got a sister with that. My real dad's got a little girl as well. Well, little girl, she's like 16 now. So, no, She's about 20 now. She's 20. 1998, she was born. Yeah, she's 20. Isn't it weird that you still feel like everyone? Like, yeah,
how old are you? What year were you born?
1990. So I've just turned,
you're 30.
I've just turned 28.
28.
Yeah, well, calm down, Matt. Calm down. I'm putting 2 years on me.
Calm down, mate. So tell me about growing up in your area and how somebody from that part of the world, I guess, finds inspiration in acting. Is it through a local drama teacher? Is it through television or films that you watched? Is it just something that was kind of inherent in you? You like to dress up, and where did the acting bug come from?
So I grew up in Wivenshaw, which is South Manchester. It was at one point like the biggest council estate in the world. I think it still might be.
My cousin was telling me this last night. He says in Europe.
It's because they only have council estates in Europe or something like that. But now it's a couple of different housing associations have bought it, so it's not got that status anymore, but it still is a council estate. But I love it, to be honest.
Was it rough?
Yeah, man. Definitely. Like when I was growing up, it's massive. Wivenshaw is literally probably about the size of half of Manchester alone. Like it's huge. So there's sort of different boroughs, different areas. When I was growing up, I was from a place called Newhall Green, which is one side of the motorway. And then on the other side of the motorway, there's a place called Bench Hill. And they were kind of like gang war with each other. So even as a kid, you know, being sort of like, you know, 13, 14, walking right down the streets, if I had mates who lived in Bench Hill, you had to be very careful walking around there. If anyone stopped you in cars and asked you where you were from, you had to be careful where you answered. You know, knife crime was mad. It's David Cameron, slips out and say his name. Came to do his hugger hoodie thing when he was first running for PM, and that's where the guy flipped in the bird behind him and that made the papers and stuff. But I mean I like the place. Me, like I say, it's got a bit of a bad rep, but the people are dead nice. You know what I mean? There's a few bad eggs, but there is everywhere, isn't there? I'm sure, you know, Oxford and Cambridge and places like that. I've got a couple of nutters. But I think
it's really interesting, and just to jump forward real quick, but not too far, is within This Is England, obviously there's the dark undertones of, you know, the working class world that it's representing, and there's some really dark stuff that goes on, but there's always humour there. There's always like a loving, nurturing, familial community element as well.
Yeah.
So that was very much your experience of growing up in a...
Yeah, man. Yeah, like my next door neighbour like was... That. Yeah, like my next door neighbour was me auntie. Like things like that, do you know what I mean? Like my gran's avenue where she lived, I had a cousin over the road, I had a cousin down the street. Like, yeah, even though it was a big area, like the community, you know, some of them weren't even my cousins. It was just, you know, like, is it Peter Casey? Oh, he borrowed a drill once or something. Like, it was like that, which was dead nice. But I enjoyed growing up there, really. And I still live there now. I moved out for a while, lived in London we lasted about 10 months, I think, me and my missus. And we just missed it, really. Like, I like going in my local and finding out what's, you know, who slept with who and stuff like that. I'm a bit nosy like that. It's brilliant. I do.
Tomo was telling me the same thing, because he's obviously, you know, always remained in Grimsby,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I think it's that similar thing, as you can go away and do your work and, you know, become successful. But then when you come home at the end of that working day or the end of the month-long shoot or whatever, it's people that you've known your whole life and they still treat you the same.
Exactly.
And they don't react differently to the newfound fame, if you want to call it that, or notoriety or recognition that...
Well, they do, because they wind you up about it. Yeah. Let's get real. Tomo knows that as well. Like, they take the piss out of it a bit. But that's brilliant. That grounds you, do you know what I mean? Because you can get so lost in it. And I know actors who've done that, you know, who've up sticks and gone and kind of got lost in that life. And fair play to them, like. I think you've always got to have that kind of grounding, kind of real life thing. And I'm like that. Like I say, I'm a family man. Like since a young age, I've always known that I want to be an actor, but I also want to have a family and a wife and kids and stuff. So, you know, I don't know how you could manage that. You know, I remember when I lived in London, getting on the tube in the morning sometimes if I had an early meeting, and seeing school kids on the tube did it for me, and I was like, wow, like that's so far removed from like my 10-15 minute walk to school in the morning, grab a milkshake on the way kind of thing.
Yeah.
They've got to get on the underground and pay for a ticket and navigate that, and you know, the school could be miles away and whatnot, and yeah, I couldn't imagine having a child there and not knowing what their life is. Where, like, now with my little girl, she doesn't go to the same school I went to, but, you know, she goes to a school not too far away, and it's similar. It's similar enough that I can go, I get her life. I get where she's at. She comes to me with a problem, I can go, yeah, I understand this, because even though it was 20 years ago, I was in this same predicament. Nearly knocked the mic then. But I don't think I could do that if it was, do you know what I mean? Especially in a place like London. Yeah. Like, how do you...
It's a mind spin, isn't it? When you see children basically behaving and having to act like adults from a very young age and negotiate those.
And that happens
seas.
Enough. Yeah, exactly. And that happens enough now anyway, doesn't it? With technology and all.
And
that
you want to retain that innocence for as long as possible,
100%,
right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. But yeah, the acting, that came in. Sorry, we
were... That's all good. That's why I love podcasts. Tangents.
You can go anywhere, can't you? It's
they
great.
Make it great. So yeah, so what gives you the, the fire?
So, for me, I guess performing came from... I had a cousin who lived in a place called Barrow-in-Furness in Cumbria. And when I was about 8 and 9, he moved to Manchester and lived with me gran, with his dad and that. They just up sticks and moved, because it's a bit of a ghost town, really, down there, up there. And he introduced me to, like, a load of... Like I say, I was about 8 or 9. He introduced me to, like, a load of things that I'd never really... seen before, because he was sort of 7 years older than me. So I remember, like, he put Friends on for the first time for me, and I was like, wow, this is great. Like, you know, I've been watching Rosie and Jim, what's this? You know, falling in love with that, with, you know, characters like Joey and Chandler, especially, like, that kind of comedic, I mean, they're all, it's a comedy show, but, you know, they're kind of the standout kind
particularly
of comedy characters.
Funny, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and watching stuff like that, he introduced me to hip-hop, which has always been a big love of mine since an early age.
Because of the storytelling elements? Or?
Because of the storytelling, yeah. Like I, you know, I can't stand a lot of new rappers now, because it is a lot of, like, mumbly stuff, and there's no
garbage,
real stuff.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is, yeah, where, you know...
the old man, but it really is.
No, it is.
When you compare it to Nas, you're like...
Exactly, man. Like, Nas, I remember my cousin had Dex, and I was probably a little bit older at this time. Godson. He had that on vinyl, and yeah, man. I mean, obviously that's not his greatest album, but I remember that sticks out. But yeah, you know, like, introduced me to all that, like N.W.A., you know, Dr. Dre, Eminem was kind of just coming up, because I remember saying to him once, actually, he said, just getting into hip-hop, and he's like, oh, so who'd you like? And I was like, oh, I really like that Slim Shady guy, but I like that Eminem as well, he's good. And he was like, it's the same guy with it. I was like, what? Is it? He was like, yeah, he's just got, like, three different names, and do you know what I mean? Like, things like that. So that kind of... got me into that element, because I wanted to be a singer then. I remember he introduced me to Space Jam, because basketball as well was another one. So I remember watching Space Jam, loving the song I Believe I Can Fly. I remember going on holiday to, like, Turkey and getting up and belting that out on karaoke. You know, and as soon as I felt that crowd, I was like, wow, this is great, like, this is good.
That was it then, was it? That was your first sort of experience of crowd reaction to live performance?
Yeah, exactly that. And then I got a little bit older. I wanted to be a singer. That's all I wanted to do. Wanted to be a singer. Got a little bit older. Voice dropped. You know, can't hold a note now at all. And then, yeah, started watching Def Comedy Jam a lot with him. That got me into comedy, and I was like, wow, like, this is the shit. This is amazing. Love to give this a go. Still kick myself that I've never done stand-up. Proper kick myself.
It's never too late. I'm 32 and I've only just started.
Have you?
I just did my third gig a few nights ago.
I saw on Twitter, actually, yeah.
So,
how did that go, all right?
There's always time.
Yeah, that's it.
I always think as well, with stand-up, the older you get...
The more
of a kind of a well of experience you can draw from when writing, but also performing the material with pathos and honesty and authenticity, I think.
That's it. I mean, I did a stand-up course when I was about... It was just before we did This Is England 86, so I must have been about 19. And I still live with my mum, sat all day playing Call of Duty. Like, didn't really have much life experience, and I did this course, and I wrote a few funny jokes and that. But yeah, you're right. I think if I give it a go now, you, like, say kids, having kids and things like that, it just gives you a bit more material, I guess. But yeah, anyway, so started watching stuff like that. And then when I got into high school, there was a girl that I fancied... who did drama club. So I was like, she was in the year above me, and I was like, yeah, I'll have a bit of that, go and do drama club with her. I remember, actually, the first time I went, I went to the wrong class, and it was a dance one, but she was there for balls to it. I'll still do it. Did that once, never went back to dance. One for me. But yeah, got fell in love with drama, really. And you know, did that from sort of the first year of high school and kind of became known then as, oh yeah, Andy does drama, you know what I mean? He's the actor.
Is that because you'd sort of always be on, as it were, or?
Yeah, like whenever we did sort of school plays and stuff, like I'd always be doing it. I'd always do drama club and stuff like that. And then,
but would you be sort of entertaining your mates in break time and lunchtime?
I was always the kind of class clown. You know, kept everyone kind of laughing and stuff. And then got a few mates involved. You know, a couple of like one, my best mate Jamie. He's you know, he started doing drama club and that a couple of like maybe a year or so after I started it. And he's, you know, he's been in Emmerdale and stuff, so he's a professional actor now as well, which is pretty mint. I just fell in love with it really from a young age. Never thought I'd get to do it because I didn't know how. Like I remember being sort of in school just doing it because it was, you know, it was a laugh and I enjoyed it, but never really knowing or thinking that you could make a career out of it. Obviously people do, but coming from sort of where I'm from, nobody really did. There was one lad who, funnily enough, was in my cousin's year, who I mentioned earlier, Lewis McKenzie. He was in There's Only One Jimmy Grimble. He played the lead role in that. That was it. That was the only reference that I had of someone who did it, but he stopped doing it after that. So I remember getting to year 10, 11 in school, starting to think about career options. And one of my mates was like, oh, what, be a marine biologist? And I was like, oh, what's that? I love science and that. And like, was looking at that, really, looking to go and do that. you know, study biology and get into that kind of stuff. And don't know why I'm terrified of the sea. Won't go in it for shit.
I'm terrified of the sea, and I think it's because the first film that I saw at the cinema was The Little Mermaid.
Ursula. I thought you were going to say Jaws then. No,
but I was only about four, so it was terrifying enough. Funnily enough, as well, I'm scared of the sea, but look at what my phone case is.
Oh, Jaws, there we go.
It is Jaws.
Oh, brilliant. That took a weird turn, didn't it? Terrified of the sea and Ginger Girls.
Yeah.
I don't like the sea. It's weird, isn't it? I want it to be it's just there's too much shit in it that wants to kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't know where
what's
it is.
Going on
exactly.
Down there.
Exactly. I'd rather swimming pool all day. And then obviously year 10, auditioned for a couple of bits. They filmed some at my school and used the kids as extras. They used the school as kind of the backdrop for an ITV program. And then through that, Michelle Smith, who casted that, was like, oh, must be a load of kids here who are willing to give up their, because it was in the 6 weeks holidays, willing to give up their time. So chucked a couple of audition kind of things our way. And did one audition for this thing called Johnny and the Bomb. Ended up getting it. Me and my mate ended up getting the part. So we were buzzing.
And was that like a film for television?
It was a TV series. Right. It's called Johnny and the Bomb. It was written, I can't remember. Somebody tell me it's Terry Pratchett, but I don't think it's Terry Pratchett. It was a book. That they were turning into a TV series about this group of kids who somehow end up back in World War II days, travel back in time and whatnot, and they have to stop this bomb from going off or something in their local area. So end up getting the part for that. But then a couple of weeks later, so me and my mate got it, my best mate from school, Todd he was called. And then a couple of weeks later, Michelle Smith rang us saying, oh, unfortunately they've changed the ages from, say, 15, 16 was what we were to, like, 12, 13, obviously at that age, it's quite a big difference.
Yeah.
So we were gutted, you know, we'd already in our head bought like mini motos and that. I wanted a petrol scooter, I don't know why. My mum won't let me have one. But it was my money, fuck it. So we ended up not doing it, but she said always, there's another audition for this thing called Bulldogs, if you fancy it, TV series. So I ended up going for that. It turned out it wasn't TV series, and it was called Bulldogs in the beginning. It was This Is England, which was pretty cool actually. Yeah, the audition for that was a bit mad really. Went in the morning, did it, ended up getting a call back like for that afternoon, doing a bit of improv with Stephen Graham, who I didn't really know who he was then because I'd not seen anything. I wasn't old enough really to see anything that he'd been in. It was.
And were you auditioning kind of, from the get go as Gadget?
No. Originally, I was going for Harvey.
Okay.
Who became? I think it was just called Bully then.
So it's just the scene where he's saying "You're dead, Dad" in the ashtray. That bit.
Yeah. Originally, in the script, I'm sure it was at like a bus stop or something because it was all improv. So we got a little bit of a script, and then we had to go in and improvise. So yeah, I went in for for Harvey, or who would become Harvey at the time, and then Shane said, oh, do you mind staying? I've got this other character if you'll read with one of our actors, who was Stephen Graham. Yeah, ended up going and sitting and doing it, and a little bit of an improvised sort of audition with him. And
he was combo? Or
yes, yeah, he was combo from the get-go. I remember the scene was, we were kind of sat playing PlayStation or whatever, and he was our older brother's mate who'd come back from prison, and he started telling us about our sort of black friend's older brother, you know, being a bit of a wrong gun and that, trying to put them ideas in our mind, and you know, Shane was looking for like where we went with that and stuff, and yeah, from there really, because it was all quite not tight-lipped, but I think it was just very early. I was one of the first sort of gang members cast, I think. So it was very early days. The script was, the script, I've got a copy of the shooting script at home, which I found a couple of months back, and it's just completely different. There's a scene at the end where there's a big fight on the beach between a group of yardies and a group of skinheads. You know, Sean stabs Combo in the sea. That's how it's like. That was what we had on, you know, day 20 of shooting. That was still the ending. It just kind of found its way through improvisation and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
To
so is that really how the story formulated was, through in the moment, organic,
yeah,
100%. Improvisational experimentation?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I remember originally Gadget was, as a character, wasn't meant to kind of join Combo's sort of little sort of separate gang. But on the day of that, like Shane was saying, like where, you know, you think where your characters would go listening to this, not where you'd go. And obviously I'm a massive lefty, so I'd not go there. But Gadget is very easily led, you know, in the scene, I think, like, you know, mentioned, like, Woody kept always putting me down and that and stuff. So, Gadget joined this bigger, harder bloke, because that's, Gadget is a soft, you know, big lad, but, you know, soft. He'll go with the biggest, hardest bloke to protect him.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and help him out. So yeah, if this guy's saying, oh, these people are coming over here doing this, and that, Gadget'd buy that shit all day, I think. Andy wouldn't. Gadget would.
What's mad about that scene is that Milky almost yeah. joins up. Isn't that mad?
Sorry. Well, again, that was down to you know, obviously Andrew Shim, like, fucking performance in that scene's amazing. Again, Shimmy said to Shane, like, Milky would buy into this a bit, because he's not, if you listen to that scene, like, Combo's not saying anything kind of Milky's race, you know, he's explicitly, you know, talking about the Argentinians and stuff in the Falklands, and then stuff about, you know, the Asian community, which at the time were, you know, the newbies, you know, there's that saying, isn't there, like, you know, whoever's last in is always the ones that are gonna get blamed,
yes,
for everything.
In relation, I think I've heard that a lot to New York in particular.
Yeah.
It's like, first it was the Italians, yeah, then it's the Irish, or yeah, the other way around, yeah.
Yeah, and now it's, you know, obviously with American general, it's Mexicans, yeah, you know, that's and Muslims.
Yeah.
And that's again, going back to what we were saying before, that's always the way it goes, you know, it's the minority, isn't it? You know, they're here, and they must be doing something bad, because we've not seen them before, and it is, you know, it's a fear of that. So yeah, going back to that, I think Shimmy's character Milky was like, yeah, you know what I mean, like, my dad works hard, and, you know, we work hard, you know, they've been here for a couple of generations now. Like, when he says to him, he Jamaican or British, he's like, yeah, I'm British, you know, because he is, you know. So yeah, it was a tough scene really, to kind of think, right, where would we had to think as our characters, because it's, you know, if we didn't, you know, most or all of us are genuinely, you know, nice people, yeah, it would have been a very different film.
Especially Steven's like the nicest of the nice, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yes, Steven's so nice, man. We were around it as the other week, and yeah, he's just a lovely bloke. He's just so far removed from Combo. It's
what's incredible about him though is he can access that dark,
yeah,
negative physical energy.
Yeah,
so convincingly.
Yeah,
he's,
yeah,
terrifying,
100%.
Isn't he?
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah, for,
when
for
he's
a little
in,
bloke.
When he's in character.
Yeah, 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 he is, mate. Yeah, and you know, sometimes you get that mixed up as well, because In 86, I had to have an affair with Stephen's actual real life wife.
The character Hannah, Trudy, right? Trudy, is it Trudy? Yeah.
Hannah Graham.
Blake and Crystal.
Yeah, all that shit. And that was terrifying was for me. Yeah, because I was like, it's Gumball's wife, this. You know, you have to get removed back and go, oh, you obviously like, it's Stephen's, you know, and
does she act in a lot of other stuff?
Yeah, she's done a few bits. What she did,
because she's so funny.
She is one of the funniest people I know. Like when when we like I was saying earlier, before we film any of the This Is England, we normally have like a week of they say rehearsals. It's more just
like bonding.
Yeah. And just what Shane does is he gets us there for that week and he just puts scenarios and ideas and things in our head that unknowingly to us will help us as actors access our characters easier.
What a great way to work.
Oh mate, it's
amazing.
As an
actor, that must be the most fun.
It is amazing, because
rather than just here's the script, stick to that, that is gospel.
Exactly. So when we did the film, we'd never met, you know, I didn't know any of the cast. A few of the Nottingham lot and Derby lot knew each other because they'd gone to a workshop together.
So who would that have been, the Nottingham Derby lot?
Chanel Creswell. Who's Kelly. Yeah. Jack O'Connell, who played Pukey in the film.
Yeah.
Kieran Hardcastle, who played Kez. Danielle Watson, who played Trev. Vicky McLeod, Andrew Shim. The majority of the gang, really, were from Carlton Television Workshop in Nottingham. So they all kind of sort of knew each other. Me, sort of Tomo, Joe Gilgan, Stephen, and say Joe Hartley were the only ones who didn't really know each other. George Newton as well. So we didn't really know any of these people, and they kind of knew each other a bit. So what Shane did in that first kind of week before we started, before any cameras started shooting or anything, we just had a week in that television workshop where them guys went, of just playing, really. Not even doing anything necessarily to do with the film. You know, we were doing stuff like, we had a talent show, where me and Jack O'Connell and Kieran Hardcastle like made a little rap. Tomo and Stephen did a puppet show where Tomo was Stephen's puppet. You just mad shit like that. But what that does is, and we went to Alton Towers. What that does is, when we started filming, then we were mates.
Yeah,
we'd spent a
and
week.
That chemistry is real.
Yeah, exactly. So going back to what I was saying, so we did that on 86. Another week of kind of rehearsals. Going back to Hannah. And what Shane did then, he was like, right, okay, so he put us in sort of separate situations. So he's like, right, Woody, lol, you guys are going on a date. So here's some money, go to Piccolino's, have a nice date, whatever. Tomo, I can't remember what Tomo's was. Stephen Graham, makeup and costume came in, done him up like a homeless person, like he looked like he was homeless. And Shane just said, go and spend the day in Sheffield, getting ignored by everyone. Didn't look like, you know, you wouldn't recognise him. He had a haircut that time as well, because he was doing boardwalks, so his hair was quite long anyway, and they did him up really well. And he went out all day being homeless. Like, literally, at one point, I think he said he was sat in a pub, and someone came over and put him a pint and said, look, don't worry, mate, like, it'll all be okay, kind of thing. And he felt shit, because, you know, he's doing Boardwalk Empire, it all fucking is okay. And this poor bloke's just handed him a pint, like, it was dead nice. And me and Hannah, and the little lad who was playing her son, Adam.
He's fantastic.
He was
as well,
brilliant, wasn't he? Yeah. My dad's from London. We had to go out and have a date, but like a full date. So we went out in Sheffield, and we went to Pizza Hut. I wasn't allowed to have a full fat Coke. Amazing. Like little things like
No,
I'd order a drink and Hannah'd be like, no, Diet Coke for him. Like we were sort of semi in character, but semi not.
Yeah.
You know, we went and took the little lad on some, you know, like the little fair rides that they have in high streets and stuff, like little bungee trampolines and that. But he's brilliant. Yeah, but Hannah's fucking amazing, man. She's one of the funniest people I know, like genuinely is.
Mum, shall I just? Because she's in the shoe shop, isn't she?
In the
film. And then she goes on and is just, I guess she's working in the wedding reception office, but she's obviously then just, you know, the love interest.
Yeah, exactly. Like Trudy's just what that character that pops up. She's kind of like, my little one watches Peppa Pig, and there's a character in it. Have you got kids?
No.
You won't know of Mrs. Rabbit then. So there's a character in it called Miss Rabbit or Mrs. Rabbit, and she does everything, every job is Mrs. Rabbit, they'll go to the airport and she'll be checking him in, then she'll be on the plane. And that's kind of Trudy in the This Is England universe. Like, she's the shoe shop lady, and then next time you see her, she's in the wedding administration place. Then the next time you see her, she's doing this. So, yeah. But, yeah, no, she's just fantastic. Like, she's just, yeah, hilarious. But, yeah, she's Steve's wife in IRL, in real life. So, that was a bit weird doing the sex scenes and stuff with her, I guess.
Let's talk about that sex scene. Hilarious. And that scream that you make, that noise that you make as you're reaching climax is fantastic. Again, with a scene like that, well, I guess we could ask this question with any scene. Is it largely down to just you and whoever else is in the scene to take the reins, as it were? Does Shane feel like he's done a lot of the groundwork at that point? And then does he kind of let you just feel it out? And
yeah, well, I mean, in them earliest, it's the first two episodes of 86, was a different director.
Okay.
So Shane was getting married at the time. So it was Shane had put them ideas and stuff in our heads. But yeah, again, yeah, it was very improvisational based. We got to just play, which is every
actor. Did you improvise the National Front misspelling?
I've seen the
show however many times, and I only noticed that the first time the other week, and you spell it, N-A-S-H-I-L.
Yeah, National Front.
National Front.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Gadget, do you know what I mean? He wouldn't know how to spell the word national. It's national, so it must be national.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. But bloody hell, I forgot about that, actually. Spraying that. Yeah, it's most of the stuff, like I say, majority of the TV show and the film is improvised. There's a script that's very, it's more like a backbone. It's more like this is the order of events, how we get there and stuff's, you know, different. The film was a bit more freer in terms of...
The film was?
Yeah.
I guess because he had more creative control over
that. Yeah, he didn't have sort of Channel 4. Yeah. But even with that, like, you know, yeah, the film was more free. We like I say, the script I've got, the shooting script, is complete. It's a different film. I could go out now and make that film. All I'd need to do is change characters' names, and you'd watch it and go, oh, I've never seen this before. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
even if you
watch
this England 20 times, it's very different. But yeah, the TV series, obviously, we'd be in Channel 4. We still improvised everything. The scenes were there, and we just improvised around them. But he still had the freedom. I remember when we filmed 90, and we filmed the... there's a episode where we all go to this mad kind of, like, rave in the woods.
Of course, yeah.
And
well, one of my favourite scenes, which we'll talk about in a second, is the scene with you and Kelly the next morning.
Oh, yeah, mate, that was, like... It's one of the best things I've ever done, man. Like, it was a ball ache behind scenes. It was I've got hay fever. My eyes were all dead, bloodshot from the pollen and that, and we'd not had much sleep because we'd filmed all the other stuff. But no, man, like, Chanel Creswell in that absolutely just nails it, man. And it was really nice little scene, because me and Chanel are quite pally anyway. We love winding each other up and stuff, and in a sense, we are. Everyone is kind of an echo of their character.
A version,
I think.
Of, yeah, yeah,
yeah. But yeah, it was just really nice to have that kind of, because Gadget don't get much of that.
Well, I was going to say to you, the reason he's kind of there for the film 86 and 88 is really comic light relief.
Yeah, yeah.
For the large part, and don't get me wrong, it's integral, but it's very much like there's, you know, that moment of I can actually breathe a sigh of relief and have a little chuckle. But with This Is England 90, with that entire series, there's so many scenes that you get. There's the fight with Harvey in the kitchen.
Yeah.
There's the morning after that horrible scene. But then there's also on the clifftop on the bench when it's...
When I finally meet her again, yeah.
And
yeah.
Tomo's obviously Sean, the character's there with you as well. And all of those scenes are pretty heavy, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Again, what Shane does is he knows us now. You know, we've been working together for sort of 10 plus years, and I think he's very clever. The guy's a genius. Like, that's not even just saying it as you know, licking his bum or anything. He is a genius, and he knows how to kind of lean on us and where he can and that. And so at the time of that. So Gadget and Kelly have always had this. It's always been in the background. I think in 86 it's mentioned that.
He's kind of in love with her.
Yeah,
right?
He's like, yeah. Oh, I love her. I should leave Trudy for her, whatever. But you never really see it. In 88, you never really see anything. And then when it gets to 90, because they've already been sown, it's already there. And the way that we kind of got to me and Shane sort of discussed, sort of playing the character, was caring, was more, not when it comes to Kelly, is I think he's not, he loves her and he wants to be with her, but I think in his head he thinks he's never going to, but he'll always be there for her because he cares for her. And at the time I was, my missus was pregnant with my little girl, so I was about to become a father, so I was naturally going through this kind of phase, you know, not phase, but I was kind of going through these emotions of right, I knew I was having a girl as well, so, you know, I was becoming a father, I'm going to have to look after this little girl for the rest of her life, and I put that into, right, okay, what if this was, you know, forget fancying Kelly, what, you know, it's this girl is hurt and damaged, and, you know, playing Gadget along the lines of, like, wanting to just look after her with no other kind of, you know,
motive
than she's my friend and I love this girl and I want to look after her. Do you know what I mean? You know, if she ends up getting with someone who's mint, then that's his best possible outcome. So it was really nice to kind of get to play that as well, because, like I say, normally Gadget is the comic relief and that's great because I love that. I love playing the comedy, but I do, like, as an actor, I love getting
meaty
that.
Drama.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. Because you sit and you watch, obviously, you know, the other guys getting in, you're like, wow, that's amazing, that's great, and I, you know, I'd love to get do a bit of that. And it's nice when you get to do it as well. And, you know, it's a different feeling that you get from it. You know, I mean, I remember some of them having to come away and just, like, go home and cuddle my girlfriend. Like, there was one in 88 where the gang confront Woody again
on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, and basically during 88 we weren't allowed to go and see Joe outside of film or anything. We had a bar on seeing Joe, we had to exclude him, so it felt real. So when we met him that first time, we kind of the first time we'd seen him since, like, the read for him, and we filmed that scene, and as soon as we finished filming, it was so, like, gut-wrenching and for us, and as soon as we finished filming it, we all went back to a pub. Shane was like, come on, we'll all go and have a drink at the pub. And he was like, right, the bar's lifted now. You can see Joe as much as you want. Like, go and have fun with him. Joe's such a fucking pleasure to be around anyway. He's a lovely bloke. Everyone was buzzing. Yeah, we'll go out. We'll go out. We're going to town. We're going to Sheffield. Do whatever. And I just turned around to Shane and I was like, I'm just going to go back to Manchester if that's all right. Just want to go home and cuddle my missus. Like, it got to me. It was the first time it did. And then obviously going on to 90 and doing them kind of bigger scenes with Kelly and that, like, yeah, man, you just have to go home and spend a bit of time to yourself and just be like, wow, it really gets to you. Do you know what I mean? Which is great. That's when you know that you've acted. Do you know what I mean?
Paddy calls it riding the low, doesn't he? Yes. I'm not sure he came up with the term, but
it's his band's name, that,
yeah,
as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the concept, isn't it? Is you're sort of absolutely drained.
Yeah.
You felt like you'd been in the ringer.
You do, mate, yeah. You do. You genuinely do. I mean, it's exhausting. Sometimes you do jobs, like sort of low-budget jobs and that. It might sound a bit diva-ish, but sometimes they're like, oh, you know, do you mind sharing a room? And it's like, oh, it's the worst thing in the world for me because I'm very sociable, but I like to just, especially when I'm working, like acting that, you just need to go and ride that low on your own. You just need to go and sit and, like, you know, watch some shit TV and just, like, get out of that headspace because it can be dangerous, you know. Look at, you know, your Heath Ledgers and stuff. It can be dangerous, you know, riding that low and staying in that headspace and stuff because it can affect you, you know what I mean? You're essentially, your brain don't really know what's going on, you know. You've got a couple of thousand-year-old brain in there. That's, like, I was going to say 2,000-year-old brain, and that's wrong, isn't it? Your brain's still, your brain is still, you know, caveman brain. It don't understand that emotion was fake for a bit. In your head, you're like, me, that was, I felt sad then for a good couple of hours over and over again, crying over and over again. Yeah, it just drains you. Just afterwards, you're just like, God. And then it's worse if, you know, your next scene, you've got to be like, hey, Gadget, hey.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let me ask you this. The costumes, the evolution of Gadget's look over the course of the film and the three seasons is, well, I mean, the whole fashion element
yeah.
is just so well done. And, you know, I think the other character, Smell, has some incredible costumes.
Yeah, she does, yeah.
But particularly 88, when you've got that kind of perm thing God, going on, the little yeah. mustache. Who is the brainchild behind all the costumes, and in your case, your own?
So it's a bit. So obviously the film, everyone was skinhead, so that was obviously from Shane's kind of childhood. And that.
Yeah.
When we went to do 86, Shane kind of came to me and went, look, I've got two ideas. He's like, Gadget and Harvey now are going to be best mates. And Harvey's very kind of like cool, kind of flock of seagulls kind of look, which I didn't have a clue they were at the time. And Shane was like, you know, you could be trying that. I want you to be a bit shit, but you could be trying that look with him. Or what about sort of 1986 hip hop starting to, I went, yeah. Whatever you're going to say next. Yeah. Because of my, cause I remember when I went audition for the film, I genuinely think one of the biggest parts I was cast in it, cause it's about subcultures. I went literally to my audition in the film. I had a Chicago Bulls top on, baggy shorts, like big sort of basketball shoes. I was a big lad. I had no reason to be dressed like a basketballer. Do you know what I mean? I'm like 5'10". You know what I mean? Like big lad. I'm not going to be a basketballer. And I think Shane saw that and was like, oh, this kid is a part of a subculture, so we'll get this. And I did. So yeah, so 86, he turned around to me and he was like, "Yeah, do you fancy doing the hip hop thing?" And I was like, "Yeah, definitely." And Steve Graham's a big hip hop head, and he put me onto a load of bands and stuff like that. So we kind of found that outfit together, really, and stuff with sort of me, Stephen, and Shane, and the costume department. And then 88 was. Yeah, I don't know what that was.
It's like sort of a secondhand car salesman.
Kind of vibe, isn't it? Yeah,
it comes from out of nowhere.
It was weird. When I had a tie on, I think, and a shirt.
Yeah,
and the perm. So the haircuts. Every other actor gets to go and have a nice haircut done by the costume department, at the hair department, the makeup department. Very nice, you know. Gets done. I get that. I get to go and sit down with Catherine and people from the hair and makeup. Peter cut my hair nice, lovely. Then Shane comes in with a pair of clippers every fucking time and just destroys it a bit. Like that's like, because Shane always says, I want everyone to look like they've put all the money into it and they've gone and got it done. And I want Gadget to look like he's got his auntie to do it. And that's how it, I think Shane's sister was a hairdresser back in the day. So he's like, I want, that's where Shane's going to get his hair cut. From his sister, so there's elements of Gadget. I think there's elements of Shane. Obviously, Sean is Shane. It's all taken from Shane's life, but there is I think a few elements of Shane that he passes to Gadget and stuff like that. I think he's like his sister used to cut his hair and stuff, so he always looked a bit naff. But you know what, Sean. So that's passed on to Gadget, which is I love that. You know, playing the naffness of it all.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tell me about Shane, because he's so funny. Like, I've never met the guy, but there's particularly the film that he did with Paddy, the Scorsese and Le Donc project, where you really see his sense of humour coming out, and he's like laughing, falling over whilst filming. And you can just tell, and from the dialogue and stuff that he's obviously helped create for all the films he's done, there's definite humour in there.
Yeah.
But then obviously there's this kind of dark undertow as well. What's, I guess, his character?
He's a genius, like I said before. You know, he's always thinking, you know, 20 steps ahead. He's a big practical joker. You'd never know with Shane when he's telling you something truthful, or especially in my case, in Gadget's case, he's trying to get a different reaction out of you. So there's elements, there's a bit in the film, for instance, where we're smashing up the houses and stuff. We go on that mad day out where I've got all the bags and that. And there's a bit where he came over to me and he went, right, okay, so get stuff out of the bag and then just run to your right. Go, you three are going that way. And the other three going that way. So I was like, oh yeah, cool. I was the only one he told to run that way. So when you see that shot, I kind of run off, kind of backtrack, and then go and follow the others, because he knew that I would. He knew that I wouldn't just carry on my own, I think. but yeah, no, he is. His character is very much like, say, he knows what he's doing immensely. And he's very, very good at it. And he's just a lovely bloke as well. Like, yeah. You know, a lot of
just super caring and
He's definitely an actor's director. You know, he will spend as much time with you as possible to get that. So it's never really, I've never really done it on any other job really. How he kind of goes about a scene is he'll get the actors in, just him and the actors, and he'll go on the set and he'll go, right, okay, let's just go. He'll just say, just go. Do what you want, and we'll do the scene kind of semi-scripted, but you know, we'll improvise around it, and then at the end he'll go, right, okay, keep that, don't do that, maybe say this, right, go again, and then we'll do it again, and then he'll be like, right, yeah, brilliant, okay, then he'll bring the camera crew in and the rest of the guys to kind of who need to be there to come and watch it, and yeah, it'll go from there then. So, and then you'll always hear him, especially again with Gadget. You'll always hear him wherever he's sat. Just go, say this, Gadge, and just throw like little things in there. You know what I mean? So he's always thinking. He's top.
Just a joy to work with.
He's an absolute pleasure to work with. Yeah, you know, to a point. Like, say, sometimes you genuinely like, is he being real? Have I got to do this? He puts you on the spot a bit where you're like, fuck's sake, I don't know if he's pulling my leg here.
Tell me about the sex scene with Stephen's real life
partner.
Yeah,
with Hannah.
Was he winding you up with that?
Yeah, like I say, a few of the first ones were with a different director, but the ones that I did with Shane, yeah, definitely. I think there was one where it was on a deck chair, and the deck chair fell through. I can't remember if it made it into the thing, but there was one point where, because you have like a modesty sock, covering your bits, and it fell off at one point, and I thought, well, he's not shouted stop, so I just carried on, and then afterwards he was like, why didn't you stop? And I was like, well, you didn't fucking say cut. And he was like, I wanted to see how long you got. I was like, fucking that, like, it was just bonkers. Like, he's he's always up for a laugh, but then obviously, you know, as with the show and the film, like, it's an emotional roller coaster in each one, so there's the highs and then there's the lows. And
does he really take that on as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. Like, when the filming them scenes, do you know what I mean? Not to really not get in the way, but just to leave him to it. Really, I remember when we did 86, and we all lived in the same block of flats with these brand new, beautiful flats in the middle of, well, on the outskirts of Sheffield, and we'd all gone out one night.
Would you go out a lot and just
every
have it
night
large?
that was my, a lot of my mates were like students and that, and I never went to uni, and you know, like, they're all like, oh yeah, like, it was great, a year of drinking. I was like, yeah, I did that year of drinking in like 3 months doing 88 86. It was crazy, mate. Like,
I guess you're all then adults, are you?
We I think Tomo was the youngest, and he would have been 18, I was 19, and we
so
went,
you could all go out.
Yeah,
and you all did,
and we all very much did. It got to a point where we got threatened to, like, Shane and that were going to kick us out of the flats, because it was round when they were filming the sort of LOL and a dad stuff, and we'd gone out one night and we'd come back and Shane and Mark, like, we'd woke them up And then it's fucking hell. It's horrible now, but it was. I mean, it's funny now, but it was horrible at the time. So we'd gone out this night. We'd been told, look, like, don't take the piss. Like, you're being loud and all that. This is your last warning now. Do not take the piss. So we went out this one night, and you know, obviously we're all young and having a laugh. So took a few girls back to the flats. Like, come and look at our dead nice flats. And yeah, we're all there partying. Music's pumping. Everyone's having a drink, having a good time. All of a sudden, the door goes. I'm stood in this in the living room of our flat with these girls. Like, oh yeah, chatting away. One of them's like, oh, I'm a film student. What's Shane Meadows like? This is early on. Oh yeah, lovely bloke, dead nice, chatting away. Shane and Mark walk in, faces like thunder, literally looking like they could kill us. And rightly fucking so, man. We took the piss. And it wasn't pleasant. And then he kind of just walks in. He's like, yeah, God. Like, yeah, hi Shane, you're right. He's like, yeah, we have a word. And got everyone like to the front door just to have a word. And then he left the room, and these girls went, oh my God, is that Shane Meadows? Do you think I can get a picture? And I went, no, not now. Went, and he basically, yeah, he gave us a stern warning. And then the next day I woke up with Tomo on the end of my bed, because me and him shared a flat. And he was sat on the end of my bed like the little leprechaun that he is. I was like, what's the matter, mate? He went, we've got to pack our cases, mate. It's like, what? It's like, yeah, they're putting us in a B&B, and the days that we're not filming, we've got to go home. And it was like the worst news. It was like Christmas had been cancelled. Luckily, he gave us a last chance, and we sort of behaved from then on. But it was crazy, man. Like I say, we were 18, 19, you know.
As you say, you hadn't been to uni. I imagine Tom hadn't either.
Exactly, yeah. None of us had been to uni and stuff, you know. We were doing this amazing thing. We were getting paid good money. We had per diems. We were spending it on beer. And, you know, every couple of days it was like, Phone Jacker came out with us one night, you know, and
he's a good dude.
He's amazing, man. He's such a bloke. You know, one night we sat there with him, and we're all sat just having a laugh in the flat, having a drink, and he went, should we do some prank calls? Oh, yes, absolutely.
That is the dream,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, we should do prank calls. You know, we had Ian Brown round, we were wrestling with him. Like, it was like a little thing that we had where to you initiate you into the gang, up. You had to wrestle. And fucking wrestling Ian Brown in the middle of my flat in Sheffield, like, as a young lad from Manchester, like, that's just mental, that's a dream. So it was crazy, man, we lived it up, which I'm glad we did to that extent. Like, we had a good time. And then when we went back and done 88, they put us in hotels. They were like,
they
yeah, you know,
lesson.
Yeah, yeah. But it was only a small shoot, that. Especially for the gangs, we weren't in it that much. It was mainly sort of lols, you know, dealing with what had happened in 86. And then when we went did 90, obviously read the script, was like, well, you know, Gadget's got quite a lot in this now with Kelly and all that stuff. And my agent kind of rang me and was like, yeah, okay, so you'll be staying in the whatever hotel. And I was like, oh, what, are they not putting us like up in flats and that? Because I've got quite a lot. It'd be nice to just have a base. Obviously, my missus is pregnant as well. It'd be nice somewhere. And my agent was like, after 86, I don't think that's going to happen again, to be honest with you, Andy. I was like, yeah, fair play. I don't blame him. Like,
but you're going to have one last hoorah. Yeah. I guess we should. I want to very quickly mention those two hilarious, like even more than your character, comedic relief, Flip and
yeah,
what's
man.
The other guy's name?
Flip and Higgy.
And yeah. Obviously that
Perry and Joe.
Higgy is now in Game of Thrones, isn't he?
He is, man. Yeah, he's the bastard son of what's his face, isn't he?
Robert
Baratheon. Yeah, 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 man. He's,
those two are hilarious.
They
aren't
are
they?
Frigging brilliant. Perry is absolutely. He's a genius, that bloke. Like, he's so fucking funny. And Joe, the same, man. Again, that was another one, like, at the time of 86, like...
Fuck
you know,
off with your ginger chips,
Fuck off with your ginger chips, Sean. I mean, what they did with that character... The best scene for me is when they're sat in Gemma's house and...
Yes.
Who'd sit in that chair or something like that? Do you know what I mean? Why's that plank got its own rug? And then, yeah, and then it's Joe goes, what gets me, mate? Who'd sit in that chair there? And it's fucking brilliant. But yeah, Joe Dempsey was another one for me. Like, I sort of went through my college years watching Skins and wanting to be his character from Skins, Chris from Skins. He was the coolest guy in the world. And when he came on thingy, I was like, it was the same as me meeting Ian Brown. It was
really?
The same. Yeah, yeah. Honestly, mate, like, I actually said it to her. I was like, look, I'm going to get this out of the way. I was like, I fucking love you, mate. I was like, I loved you in Skins. I wanted to be you when I was in college. I literally, all your bright outfits and partying all the time, like, that was me. I was mimicking. And he's such a top bloke, Joe, as well. Like, he's so humble, and because the guy's doing some amazing things, especially now, like, say, with Thrones and stuff like that. I think he was auditioning for that while we were doing 88, I want to say.
Wow, that's how long Game of Thrones has now been going, I guess.
Yeah, man. And he was telling us, he was like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this thing called Game of Thrones. Have you heard of it? And I was like, nah, not really. And he was saying, yeah, like, playing this. And he told us the kind of the outcome of what you found out now. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm like the bastard son of the king, so it might come that, like, I might have a claim to the throne and all that. Which is brilliant, man, because I love Game of Thrones now as well, so I had that little insider scoop. But no, he's a lovely bloke. Perry Fitzpatrick as well. Fucking great bloke.
Are they sort of based, because obviously they're like, I guess what you would now call the Chavs in 86, but then they just become this weird shell suit, like...
Yeah.
Almost like the two guys in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah,
aren't they? Like a comedic double act.
Yeah, I don't know what they...
80s
like,
cop duo.
Yeah, it's very Miami Vice, isn't it? It's very Sheffield Vice look. Yeah, I don't know what they're meant to be. Again, I think what Shane does is he puts the characters over, like you say, fashion and stuff, like with Gadget. He's like, yeah, he'd get into hip-hop and he'd do this because he's that kind of guy. He's just... Whatever trend comes through, Gadget wants to jump on it. Probably why he was a skinhead in the film.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks before, he was probably a mod.
Yeah.
You just happened to catch him at that time. And with them two, it's like, yeah, they just do their own fucking thing, don't they? You know what I mean? Like, in 90, like you say, they just... You don't... What are they? They're drug dealers. We get that.
But they're listening to, like, 80s hair metal.
They're not drug dealers. They're buying off us. They're listening to, like, rock metal. Like glam metal and all that. Thinking it's dead cool. Thinking everyone else is just fucking weird.
When
in actual fact, it's they're the weirdos. But that scene on the pool table, man.
Incredible.
That's so funny. And the one outside the flat. With Harvey, like, buying weed.
Yeah.
Like, Perry again, just, I want to buy 50p's worth. Like, don't really work like that, mate. No, if I buy it now, I'll just give you back tomorrow if I don't use it.
I'm just going to sniff it.
Yeah. Sniff banging. It's massive in the States. Like, sniff banging and that, like, I think that was just, again, Perry and Shane just sat there just coming up with, like, random ideas of...
Amazing.
..of where these absolute idiots can come from.
Let's talk about... I just want to wrap up This Is England quickly by talking about the wedding scene. Was that the last thing you all shot?
Yes. So the wedding reception was the last scene on... we went back and did, like, pickups.
Yeah, but when you're all, the last together. Time you're all together.
Yeah, man.
That must have been... Because I always remember when I was a kid, I used to watch all the DVD extra features on the films that I bought. And the Lord of the Rings one always really hit me because, you know, that was a similar sort of thing, I guess, on a bit more of a... You know, intense scale, but you're with all these people over the course of however many years. You grow up with them,
come
up together, and then they're all saying how, like, that last scene that you all do together is just, like, crushing, heartbreaking.
Yeah, man, it was. Because
at the end of an absolute era of your life, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was exactly that. You know, I was 14 when I got the part, 15, you know, when we filmed, taking my GCSEs on set. And stuff like that. When we did Night Air, I was about to become a father. So I'd grown up, my life had gone through so many stages personally, and so had Gadgets. And so has everyone. You know, we all know each other very well, especially from doing the TV show. Like, we see each other all the time, you know, not all the time, but we try and stay in touch, obviously, as much as possible. And we're good pals, we're good friends. And that end scene, you know, where we're all dancing, that was the last thing that was shot, where we're all dancing at the at the reception.
And
Shane and Mark came in, like, cut, and then kind of did a speech and was just saying, like, this is the summit different, and hopefully we'll do that. It was bittersweet because we were like, this is the last one, and then Shane and Mark were like, you know, we might do another one, we don't know. And it was like, oh, come on, do it. So I think there's possibly another one in the can.
Yeah,
I think there's one there, hopefully.
92, would it be? I think it'd probably be different.
It's been 4 years now, hasn't it? So I reckon maybe if it's soon, it could be 94. You try and do it around, like, football, don't they? Each one around a World Cup in the background or a war in the film. Bit different. Hopefully. Like, I'd love to do another one. Just because there's nothing else like it. There's no other job I've done anyway that has, and a lot of actors say this, you know, such a family, but, you know, we are a family. Like, when we're on set, we're in each other's pockets, we're borrowing money off each other, we're, you know, staying over at each other's houses, and, you know, we become a unit, and I've never experienced that before, and probably never will again on any other job.
Yeah, I think it's so unique, isn't it? I think there's so few projects that offer you that, because it's the revisiting.
Yeah.
You know, when you just do like a film, obviously it's, you know, it's a quite a short burst of in and out.
Yeah.
And then it's done, isn't it? But when you keep revisiting a project every few years, it's like, you know, reunions regularly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It is like a reunion. It's like going and seeing your schoolmates again, or something like that.
And you went out on Sean's stag do, didn't you, recently?
I did. We went to Benidorm.
Sean. That's hilarious, isn't it? Man. I mean, how old was he in the film?
In the film, I think he was 30. He's a year younger, year and a bit younger than me.
Right.
I think he was 13 when we filmed it, and I was just turned 15.
So you're a dad, he's getting married.
Yeah, I got married last year. He was one of my groomsmen. Like, we went off to Benidorm for his stag. He was about 30-odd of us.
I saw some pictures, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy,
big crew.
Mate. It was mental. We went out one night in drag, one night in like shit shirts. Like, it was proper Benidorm. Do you know what I mean? And Tomo's like that again. Going back to like what we said before, you know, it'd be so easy for Tomo to have his stag in like Marbella, you know, and we'd go and, you know, drink champagne on a yacht and have a laugh and that. But that's just not mine nor Tomo's kind of stick. Do you know what I mean? He's like, nah, I'm gonna go to Benidorm with the lads. It's gonna be proper cheesy. It's gonna be proper like. You know, it was Benidorm. It was very, very Benidorm. His mates made it very, very Benidorm. Like, it was great. It was crazy at times.
I'll bet.
You know, it was madness. But yeah, it was brilliant.
And let's talk about the podcast, Overrated Everything.
Yeah, man.
Which by the time this goes out, it will be live on all platforms.
Yeah, it should be.
So
if I don't
iTunes,
balls it
Acast.
Up again. Yeah.
The premise. Tell me about the premise, and then some of the guests that you've already done, and then perhaps others that you might have lined up.
Yeah. So basically, the premise is we don't want to do a straight interview thing because you do this, and there's a couple that do it, and that's amazing. You guys do it very fucking well, and that's great. And me and Tomo, like. I've been wanting to do a podcast for a while now because I love him. And I just came up with this idea randomly, and I said to Tom, I was like, we should do a podcast. And he's like, oh, yeah, I like listening to them. And I was like, look, I've got this idea of someone comes on with a subject that they hate but everyone else seems to like. And I went, like me, I'd say football. I don't get it. And he's like, what? Fucking what? Like football, you idiot. And we had an hour's chat just sat in a pub before going and doing a DJ set. About that, and I was like, yeah, there's something in this could work. This
especially, as you say, if people are picking topics which are otherwise so universally accepted and cherished, and you're like the one odd one out that's like, nah, I just don't get it.
Exactly, because what it does is it allows the audience to have a view on it. Some people might, you know, with football for instance, there's a lot of people that don't like it, but there's
a lot
of people that would fight and kick out of each other for a fucking team, for a bunch of blokes who were getting paid stupid amount of money to kick a bag of air around. Like, that's how I see it.
Yeah, when you break it down,
it's crazy.
Like that.
I mean, I'm not massive into sport anyway. But yeah, that's it. So, you know, people can come on with any premise they want. We let them pick, you know, and it varies. So the first guest that we had was Kieran Griffiths, who's a friend of ours. He was in Shameless, played Mickey Maguire. His subject was technology, which is very universal. There's people who love it. I'm a bit of a techno buff, but then there is part of me that is a bit like, oh, I'm a bit of a technophobe as well, so it appeals to everyone really. The next guest is a friend of mine who runs rap battle leagues. He's a rap battler called Lewis Bison Briggs, and his subject was Biggie Smalls is overrated, which to
Biggie Smalls is overrated.
Wow. Yeah, it's not as good as people.
And he's obviously informed on that subject because
he's a rap. Yeah, he's a rapper. He's a rap battler. You know,
interesting.
And he came with a great argument. You know, he had some good stuff to say. And I at first was like, nah, fuck off, mate. Like, you know, I grew up on Tupac, but then as I got older, I was like, oh, Biggie, man. Like, wow. And started listening to him more. Them two are done in the can. They were recorded months ago now, and it's just been trying to get everything ready for them. A couple of weeks ago, me and Tomo went interviewed Stephen Graham.
Love it.
Which is going to be a good one.
I'll bet.
Fine dining was his. Yeah, which was good. Because some of the subjects were like,
The more random, the better.
Yeah, we agree with. We're like, yeah, actually, fine dining's a bit shit, but that's fine. Like, we're not trying to. I think at the beginning, the first two episodes, we're trying to change the mind.
Yeah, so you wanted the debate element.
Yeah, we wanted to go, no, here's some facts, let's try and change your minds. But then, like, you know, sometimes you can't do that, and it's great. We're just, it's just a nice chat, and similar with your show, like, it can go anywhere. You know, we start with a topic, we can go into whatever.
You're obviously going to be talking to Stephen about your memories and
yeah, there's bits of that. Together, we don't, we're not really, you know.
You don't want it to be the This Is England podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing we want to try and stay away from is it's, yeah, it is, you know, Tomo and Gadge, but it's Sean and Gadge, but it's Tomo and Andy.
Gets confusing.
It's hard because they all call me Gadge anyway.
He was telling me,
So Tomo has to make an effort. And in the first
Does
two episodes,
he call you Andy in the podcast.
He calls me Andy. He calls you Andy in the podcast, which is weird to hear.
Yeah, is
it's
it?
Like when your mum calls you
Andrew?
Your nickname. Yeah, it's like if my mum called me Andy, it'd be weird. It's Andrew, mum. Like, do you know what I mean? So he had to make a conscious effort in the first two to call me Andy, and then of course when we went and sat with Steve and Graham, Steve was like, "All right, Gadge, how's it going, mate?" Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? So he just went out the window, and that's fine, man. Like, it's very open and free anyway. We interviewed John McClaw from Reverend and the Makers.
Great.
Which was a great interview. We went over to his studio in Sheffield. He just finished recording, which was cool. So we sat and watched him record a bit for his new demos, and then just sat with him and had a chat. His subject was sort of the Americanization and like shortening of words that don't need it. So you know, like when people say flashlight or video games gets to me, the fucking computer games, they always have been. Video games, it's so American.
Yeah,
it offends me. And it was great, but that chat was great. But that went everywhere, man. He started telling us about his fear of flying, everything. It just, what we don't tend to do, which again is because like podcasts like yourself smash it anyway, is talk about career or where they grew up or anything like that, because other people do that and that's fine. Like, you know, John's done a two-shot podcast or whatever, and you know, they've spoke about that, that's great. We just wanted to have a chat, you know, a nice kind of bantery chat with him. I hate that word, banter.
It's been appropriated by the wrong kind of people, hasn't it?
That's why.
Posh students,
yeah,
right? Exactly. All bants.
But, you know, most of the guests that we get, so especially at the beginning now, like me and Tomo kind of reached out to our friends and that.
So I guess a lot of the time they won't even necessarily be like a celebrity guest.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, like Lewis Briggs, I mean, he's big in the world that he's, you know, if you're in the rap battle world, you know who he is. He runs a league. And stuff like that, but other than that, you probably won't. But he's fucking mint. He's got such good stories to tell. Do you know what I mean? He's, you know, he's best mates with an artist called Shotty Horror, who is pretty big at the minute, or just about to blow up. Signed with Sony, and he's just got some interesting stories to tell. But yeah, we want to interview, you know, just interesting people at the minute. Most of the ones that we lined up, they are kind of actors and stuff like that. But that's just because, you know, we're reaching out to people that we know and we want to get it off the ground.
Pool, isn't
exactly.
It? Yeah.
Exactly. So we've got some good ones lined up. Tomo's messaged me the other day. We've got Paddy McGuinness lined up, which is amazing.
Amazing.
Gemma Whelan, who plays Yara Greyjoy. So that'll be very interesting in Game of Thrones.
So let's Clint talk Boone. About Game of Thrones real quick.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite character?
That's a tough one. That is a tough one. Favorite character in Game of Thrones,
or perhaps
Daenerys,
the one you're most rooting for, Daenerys. Yeah,
I think. Yeah, I mean, she's beautiful, isn't she? Like,
what if you talk about character arc and journey as well?
Oh, mate, yeah, mate. Like, she's such a badass, and again, such a, you know, role model, fucking powerful female role model. Because at the beginning, you know, she's been sold by a brother and forced to do this and that, and it's like the you know. Stereotypical kind of woman role within that universe of medieval stuff, and then bam, it just switches and she's just a boss ass bitch, isn't she, basically? Like, she is, and like I say, she's just amazing, man. Like, props to her. What's her name now? Her name's completely gone out of my
head. I love Arya.
Arya, yeah, again Arya Stark, man.
She's just the most, like, I don't know whether I've ever seen a show where a character has gone from such, like, a little unassuming, unthreatening. Like, she was always cheeky and kind of fun and likable, but she's, like, literally a brat kid, isn't she, to begin with?
Yeah.
And then already now, and God knows what's going to go down in this last season, but when she takes out that wedding party, like, and pulls off the mask.
With the pie, she gives him a pie, does she? Oh, mate. So good. Yeah, probably her as well. She's up there. But I love Game of Thrones. For me,
it's great. And anybody who's put off by the fantasy element obviously fails to see the Shakespearean kind of Jacobean levels of betrayal and political intrigue and
exactly that. I mean, my
familial betrayal.
Exactly. It's much more than just a fantasy show. My missus isn't into anything like that. She doesn't watch any of the Marvel. She's not into anything kind of fantasy or sci-fi or anything.
So you're solo, are you?
No. This was to say. So for my, it was like my 25th birthday. I had a Game of Thrones theme party. Everyone dressed up. We did it in my garden. I went all out. I made like blood pie, like black pudding pie and big stews and all that. Like I went all out. I went as Khal Drogo. My missus went as
you got a picture of that?
Will. My little girl, we got her a little dragon outfit. Like it was cool, man. Everyone made a great effort. And afterwards, my missus was like, oh, I should watch it now, shouldn't I? And I went, yeah, man, yeah, like let's watch it. And she fucking loves it now. And yeah, exactly that. If you ever put off by fantasy or whatever, give it a go, man, because it's not, especially in the first series, there's not that much kind of fantasy elements.
No.
That kind of comes in later on, doesn't it, with the White Walkers and the magic coming in that. But it's I really like it. It's weird, isn't it? Because it's
if you like Gladiator, I would say then check it out. You know, it doesn't even need to be fantasy based, but it's definitely in that kind of old, ancient, historic, epic world.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess if you like, you know, deep, sort of well built universes like Harry Potter and things like just go far beyond what's in the books and far beyond what's on the screen. Like, you know, it's such a rich universe that like they're making spin-offs of it next time.
Are they really?
Yeah. So when they say
they're going to milk it for all it's worth.
Well, but,
as you say, it's so vast and deep. And
yeah, exactly. There's loads of stories. Like each when they mention a story, I think on the show or in the book that story probably exists. I think he's wrote it. Which is pretty cool. So yeah, that'd be good. And they're running out of Northern actors on it. So you know, these spin-offs need some fresh Northern actors, and I'm biting for a go.
Putting the word out.
Yeah, I auditioned for it a couple of years ago.
Did you?
Yeah. Didn't get it.
Which part? Or would you rather not say?
No, it's fine. It was Thor. Originally, because they keep it all dead. It's one of them, mate. It's Mission Impossible. You get like 4 days with that script, and then that script self-destructs, just deletes itself from obvious reasons.
What do you have to say when you go to the offices, wherever? Because is it like a code word?
You have to sign a disclaimer before they give you the script, saying that you're obviously not going to talk about it beforehand and stuff like that. It's all very secretive. The script has they do that a lot anyway. The script has your name kind of, what's the word? Watermarked on it. So if you drop, if you leave that script, then you're balls. I don't even think you could print it, you know. I don't even think you could have printed it. I think it was on your computer or your phone. That was it. And then it self-destructs, like I say. So it was for... it was in the last series, and it was a gate guard that Arya actually... It's a Stark gate guard, but in the script, the girl's name, Arya's name, was, like, changed to something. I think
it when she's trying to get back in the castle, and it's the two guys?
Yeah, the two gate guards, So it was a very small, quick scene, and I know the actor who got it, and he's fucking great anyway. So it's all good. It was really good. Sometimes I'd love to do it, but then sometimes you kind of like, I just want to watch it as a fan of it. Do you know what I mean?
Because you're so entrenched in it now.
It's a world to me that, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I've worked with a couple of people out of it who've been in it and stuff, and I know a few people who are in it. And it's, it's hard sometimes to separate them. Obviously, the great actors, and you can easily. You know, when I'm watching Joe Dempsey as... what's his character's name now? It's gone.
I think they just call him the Bastard, don't they?
Know. Yeah, the Bastard. As you're watching it, you know, you're not watching Joe Dempsey, do you know what I mean? Like, it is good, but yeah, I'd love to. I think one of my mates who was on it said, like, the sets are, like, you know, real. Like, if they've got a pig roasting on a fire, like, it's a real pig roasting on a fire, and, like, you know, when they've cut, like, they'll serve it up at lunch and stuff. I like that, mate. I think it's, like...
Authenticity.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And the John Bradley West is from the same town as you.
He is, yeah. He went
blows
to
my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Two lads from Wivenshaw. Similar kind of lads as well, aren't we? Both kind of would go for the same parts, I guess.
Very similar tastes in music, and he's all into Happy Monday, Stone Roses.
Nice, yeah. All of that stuff. Well, that's Manchester, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of, as much as I said earlier on, you know, I'm not really proud of I am proud of where I'm from, but I'm not, you know, it's not necessarily a thing. But I think as a Mancunian, you have that kind of especially growing up in the early 90s and that, you know, Stone Roses, Oasis, I suppose later on, the Happy Mondays, In Spirals, the Smiths. Manchester's got such a rich music scene, it's hard not to listen to it, I guess.
And be proud of it.
And be proud of it, yeah. And I think it's about to kick off again. There's some great up-and-coming artists.
The Blinders, dude, you heard them?
Yeah, nah,
really
not
good
much
band.
Of them, no good.
Cabbage, from operating around here, really good.
Yeah, man.
Coming back. Yeah, it's coming home.
Definitely. But yeah, John's a nice lad. I've only met him once. Got a couple of mates in common, mutual friends. He was in the year above me at a different high school. I think he went to the Catholic high school near me, St. Paul's. And I've met him a couple of times. And he's a nice lad, yeah, John. Yeah, he's a nice lad. Yeah.
Do you have a website or anything like that? Because I'm led to believe that you make short films and things like that too, right?
I do, yeah.
Do you have sort of a one-stop shop where people can go and check out your...
No, not the
minute.
Basically,
work?
I started a production company called Northern Lads Productions with a couple of lads about 8 years ago now. We started doing bits. We did some really cool stuff. We had Idris Elba direct one of our music videos that we produced, which
nice.
Was amazing.
Which band was it for?
They're called The Last Party.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was good. But then I ended up having Little Learn and working a bit more. One of the other lads, Sean Ward, he ended up getting Coronation Street and working quite a lot. Jamie Shelton, he ended up getting Emmerdale and working quite a lot. And then he had Little Learn, so we kind of sort of drifted apart a bit. We're kind of doing bits now, but I've just started a new production company called Odd Draw Digital. So nothing... Possibly by the time this goes out, if you have a look at Odd Draw Digital, I'm sure there'll be a website up and running and stuff. We've got some cool projects lined up with them. Just want to get back into it now, really.
I bet.
Start making my own stuff. I've been working for Unilad for a while as a writer and kind of director, producer there, kind of headed up their comedy originals stuff. But yeah, I'm just itching to get doing my own stuff now. With the podcast coming out and stuff like that, it's like, right, I just love being creative.
Creative and busy. And
creative,
I guess,
busy, yeah.
You're obviously a fan of the craft of acting, but it seems like you're involved in the whole thing from the writing to the shooting to the editing. Like, it seems like that is kind of where you're at home, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I fell in love
within
with
the creative industry.
Yeah. I fell in love with it through Shane, you know, watching Shane, how he works, you know, because he's, like I say, he's very much an actor's director. And watching his earlier stuff like Shane's World, have you seen that?
No.
It's got a short series. It's on YouTube, I think. Shane's World. And it's just him and his mates sticking about with cameras, making little short films. If you watch it now, it's like Olivia Colman and Paddy and stuff like that. But back then, you'd watch it and go, oh, these are just Shane's mates. And it's fucking brilliant. And then as soon as we finished doing this as England, my dad got me a digital camera. Little tiny little webcam thing back in fucking 2005. And me and my mates was like, right, we're going to make a film. So me and my mates started making a short film. Literally duct taping it to curtains so we could get the angles and stuff like that, because he didn't have didn't know what a tripod was or anything like that. And then the more I was doing acting, the more I was thinking I don't understand what they're saying. Like, that camera guy's saying something about a lens or something, I don't get it, it's just saying numbers. And I wanted to learn it, so I went and did like a filmmaking course at college, did that for a couple of years, me and my mate, and just fell in love with that side of it. Really, it's nice to know both sides of it, I guess, for me, because when you're acting, you know, it's so different from doing, say, theatre or stuff like that, because you have got to stand somewhere and say something at a certain time, you've got to hit a mark and say it and that. So to understand why you've got to do that helps you understand, it helps you do it better, do you know what
of
I
mean? Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, working in a bar, for instance, and not understanding the different types of ale, or do you know what I mean? I think you've got to go, right, okay, well, this one's a light ale and this one's a dark ale. It's the same with that, you know, with every kind of walk of life, you've got to kind of go, you've got to understand it all, I think. Anyway, that's personally for me.
I absolutely agree.
You know,
and I think that the more you do know, then the more you can apply that knowledge of area A to area B and vice versa.
Yeah,
right?
Man. Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you're an actor, I think you're probably going to be a better director because you understand.
Yeah, I mean, the
acting.
Way me and my kind of co-director, Jamie, work is he's very much technical and I'm very much an actor's director, like I say, because I've come from the school of Meadows, do you know what I mean? So, and I'm an actor myself, so it's, yeah, exactly that. You can, as an actor, I guess, you know where you'd reach to get to a certain point, so you can sit with another actor and go, right, what about, you know, think about this, or, you know, and Shane does that so well, and it's applying that, do you know what I mean? Like, think about this, think about the time that this happened, or have you ever had this done to you, or whatever, and put that in this character's, you know, eyes, through his eyes and stuff. So, yeah, it does help, and it's great, and it's good just to stay creative, man. Like,
Keeps you out of trouble as well, doesn't it? Mind you, I guess you've got a daughter to do that as well.
Well, yeah, exactly, I've got that now. But no, like, you know what, did This Is England, the film, at 15, obviously came out of that, did some, like, proper jobs, as I call them, like, you know, worked in a supermarket, worked at a call centre, and it's great, you know, and people who do that, fucking fair play to them, say I've done it myself, but for me, it's important to remain creative. So if I'm not getting acting jobs and I'm sat in a call centre, I'm going out at the weekend and I'm making my own stuff for nothing more really than my sanity.
Yeah.
Because the minute I stop doing that and get comfortable at the call centre, which you can, and I've been tempted to in the past because you're earning money, you've got kids to feed now, you've got a wife, you know, things like that. It's very easy to go, you know what, I'm on a decent wage here, get my weekends off with my kids, can take them away on holiday. Mint, that's great. But if you don't keep that creative flair going, then for me personally anyway, it can get me in some spirals, man. Do you know what I mean? You've got to go, right, I'm going out the weekend, I'm just going to take a camera out, I'm just going to dick about with my mates or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And it's so easy to do now for anyone who wants to do it. Like, you've got a high definition camera on you in your pocket now. Didn't have that when I was, well, did, because my dad got me this webcam, but... Do you know what I mean? Like, you can make a film on your iPhone, like, do it. Do
yeah,
I mean?
With don't... iMovie as well. Nuts.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. It won't be the most best amazing quality,
no.
But it's summer. Do you know what I mean? It's your creation down on a... It's better than what they had, you know, 30 years ago, for instance.
On film sets in some cases.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's well better. When we did This Is England, it was film, which was, yeah, I mean, beautiful look, but... A ball ache to work with. Every you're getting right into a scene, it's like, right, the film's gone, just hold it there, right, let's go from here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you clearly got into everything for the love of the craft,
yeah,
as opposed to wanting to get famous.
Yeah, I never got that. Never got anyone who wants to be famous, really. It's nice when people recognise you for good stuff that you've done.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong, it's lovely. People genuinely walking here, then there's a guy doing charity stuff for UNICEF. And he stopped me. I was like, oh, mate, I've got a gun. He's like, no, like, your gadget. And I was like, oh, yeah, mate, you're right. Like, I thought he was stopping me to give him some money, but obviously I was in a rush.
Your
to
gadget.
Here. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I
was like,
I am.
Yeah. But it's nice. Like, it is nice. But, yeah, I've never got why anyone would want to be known for being known. You know, like,
yeah,
reality TV stars or anything like that. I don't really understand it. It has its perks. It's nice, you know. People give you nice things, I guess, you know. I've not really had to buy trainers for the past 5 years because Scots will be like, oh, mate, here's some trainers. Like, yeah, man, like, I'd love my trainers. You know what I mean? Thank you very much. That's amazing. But why?
The perks of the job.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. You get that. But, nah, I do it, mate, because I love it. And I can't... I always call it... Because my missus, she's a nurse, so she kind of gets it now. But when we were kind of early on in our relationship, she didn't quite understand why... I'd go and work for a month for next to nothing and leave a job that I was getting paid decent money for. And I always call it, if you're an actor and you're in it for the love of it, it's kind of a curse, man. Because...
I get that.
You can't be happy doing anything else. You can't be happy. Like you say, you know, like with UniLad, a couple of months back, I was there full time and... You know, I sort of settled down a bit, and after a couple, I was like, "Nah, I can't do this because I'm not focusing on my stuff, and my stuff is important. Might not, you know, make us loads of money, and we might not be able to go to Disneyland next year. But I know in the long run, it's what makes me happy, and if I'm happier, you know, my family.
You're
going to
be
happier,
a better husband, better father,
and yeah, you know." What's
and money ain't everything, is it?
Nah, man, nah. As long as you know what I mean, like, as long
you
as
you can basically pay your bills.
Yeah, exactly.
And then everything
exactly.
else is a nice bonus, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it helps getting a couple of grand doing this podcast, like, but it
certainly does. Yeah.
No, I'm joking, but
under the table.
No, it is. It's happiness. You know, is what you make it, man. Like, I've been, like I said, been in some dark places, even recently, really, over like money issues. And
yeah.
Sometimes you get being an actor, you get offered stuff that you really don't want to do. But again, the money's there and it's acting and you're like, should I? You know, I got offered an advert just before Christmas and it collectively, if I'd have took that and if I'd have got it, I think it would have been something like 300 grand within 3 years, which is fucking life changing. That's my house paid for. That's, you know,
just for an advert,
just for a couple of adverts. Yeah,
right.
But the advert was like,
it was like one of those ones where there's a narrative that goes on, like the old BT one.
It was basically, yeah, it was like it was for like Freedom or whatever they're called, Spot Cream, and it was like, it'd be like a girl looking in the mirror or going, oh no, or a guy in another one going, oh no, I've got spot, and then the friend goes, oh, try this Freedom, and as they rub it you go into the spot and it's like, I'd be like this little gremlin in there going, oh no, Freedom, like drowning in it. And I was like, nah. I looked at it and I was like, all fair play to the guy, but it's kind of like the Go Compare effect, or
yes,
the Harold from,
yeah,
from NatWest or Halifax, whatever he's from.
I guess it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because as you say, that money could change your life and then
completely,
you would never have to worry again. But then it's like, well, if you do that and then become that guy, you've undermined this I mean, the one thing which obviously is the double-edged sword of This Is England is it's such a recognisable thing that I think perhaps some people involved in it have maybe found it difficult to distance themselves from.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm known as Gadget. You know what I mean? Like, and that's fine because it's such a good thing. I think.
But what an amazing series and franchise to be related to. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I know,
because it's so well respected and admired, you know, because of the music, the clothes, the storyline, like it's credible as fuck.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, 100%. And I know I have definitely lost out roles from it. Recently I lost out on a role and they told me it was the This Is England thing, and it's like, a fair do. But that outweighs how proud I am to be part of that series, because it's fucking, it is amazing to be a part of. And the fans, you know, the reception it got and the fans and the friendships I've made doing it far outweighs me missing out on a part and stuff. But yeah, man, like you say, you know, parts come and go and stuff, and that's great, but they won't ever be anything like that, I think, and that's worth more than any other part, I think, in the world, unless I get to be Bond or the Doctor.
There you go.
Be the Doctor if she comes male again.
Andy, thanks so much for a great chat,
Thank
dude.
Thank you very much, man.
Really enjoyed it. Overrated Everything is the name of the podcast. Go check it out. It's on iTunes and Acast. Really enjoyed it, mate. Thank you very much for your time.
Much, Matt. Thank you. It's happy hour again. I might be happy if I wasn't out with them, and they're happy. It's a lovely place to be. Happy that the fires will abide, and it's a shield. With a haircut, smile, and the meaning of style is a night out with the boss. Where you win or you lose, and it's them who choose. And if you don't win, then you've lost.